Sam Nation, coming to you loud and clear from our desert fortress here in the Nevada desert, a.k.a. Las Vegas. And good morning. It's Friday, and what a week it's been. Before we get into all the happenings, welcoming back to the program, to the hot seat, the man in charge. Now that we're in the desert, Bedouin Rob, is that the new handle? Maybe not. Too much of a cowboy hat, not enough turban. Yes, we have producer Robbie back. It's great to have you. We've missed you. Are you refreshed? I like it. Of course, Dr. Audio doing his thing behind the board, making magic here on the Sam Nation program. Robbie, I got to tell you something funny. So I was, what day was this? Wednesday, I was coming down. Oh, where was I? I was stuck in traffic. There was a lot of traffic headed over to the T-Mobile Arena, which is the home, in case you are not familiar with Las Vegas. It's the new home of the Vegas Knights, our absolutely record-smashing hockey team that we have here in Las Vegas. At any rate, there was this insane amount of traffic clogging up Tropicana, and so I used some side streets. I used some tricks known only to locals like me. And I end up, there's that street that goes to the T-Mobile Arena called Park, but I ended up in a little side street, and I end up briefly on Park just to make a U-turn to go back around, because I need to get to Las Vegas Boulevard, to the Strip. And apparently there was some kind of an event, some kind of a rodeo event at the arena. And I look over, and what I saw a sea of people that looked just like you. I mean, it was like a Robbie look-alike convention. And everyone had big buckles and big boots and big hats. I mean, these guys were all trying to outdo one another as to who had more of a cowboy shtick. And I don't know, did you go there? Were you there? No, you missed it. Well, oh, what an event. And I almost caused an accident. I couldn't stop staring. It looked like a lot of fun. At any rate, friends, what a week. What a week. The whistleblower has been unmasked. And here is why the left is having an apoplectic fit over this. No. It's not because they care about this guy getting hurt. If they cared that outing this whistleblower, this truth teller, this brave individual that came forward to shed light on the ineptitude and evilness and corruption of Donald Trump, if that was really their concern, then Christine Blasey Ford, they never would have trotted her out front and said, they give a rat's rear end about her. Remember her? She was the high school girl, now 50-something years old, who claimed that Brett Kavanaugh did unspeakable things to her back when they were still eating peanut butter jelly sandwiches, and maybe she had a unicorn on her backpack. I don't know. At any rate, long time ago. But they didn't care about outing her. They didn't care that trotting her out would create the frenzy that it did for her. They didn't, because they used her and they needed her to be public. But here, the left doesn't want this guy to be public. And they don't want him to be talked about, revealed in any way, because they do not want the associated scrutiny with exploring who this guy is, what his motivations are, what his background is, right? All the things that would obviously discredit him because he's a hack. This guy, we'll call him Eric C. Eric, this guy's a big-time Democrat. He worked on the Trump-Russia deal. He's a guy who worked under for many years, James Clapper, traveled and worked with Joe Biden. Biden, a former vice president, at the center of all of this brouhaha, because why? Because it was Biden that interfered himself in a very explicit quid pro quo deal with the Ukraine to fire the prosecutor who was actively investigating an energy company that had hired Biden's son. So this is a guy, apparently, who's some type of CIA analyst. He had been formally fired from the National Security Council for leaking. And he served in the Obama administration, returned to the CIA, also worked for John Brennan. And yes, is a longtime registered Democrat. This biographical information is what the left doesn't want to talk about. And not just the political left, but absolutely the media that hold water for them. So this, in fact, we found, have you seen this picture? Dr. Audio, do you see this? Do you remember this picture? Do you remember? Okay, ladies and gentlemen, I'm holding up a photograph taken on the morning after Donaldus Maximus was elected president of the United States. And it was a day after the election in 2016 that there was a gathering in the Rose Garden. And President Obama gave some remarks, and the staff members, the various members of the Obama administration who were working in the West Wing, came out of their lairs and stood there off to the side. And they look, do you remember this photo? They look so morose and so sad and so upset. What's the word? Funereal? Is that the word? The only thing that's missing is a replica of the deceased in the potato salad. And this guy right here, I made a little circle around his face. That guy with this long face, and he's standing right there next to Susan Rice. Uh-huh. He's the whistleblower. So what we need to do right now with all of this, and if there are any legitimate news media left in this country, we got to stop pretending that this guy doesn't have an agenda. I'm okay accepting the fact that Trump has an agenda, but you cannot give it to me. You cannot try to convince me, sell to me the idea that the whistleblower is a sacred cow. And this really comes down to a very important point about the left in America in 2019. And that is that the left establishes these certain protected classes of individuals. Sacred cows is what we call them colloquially. And they, by virtue of their standing or identity, become untouchable and unassailable. Well, whistleblowers, right? You even know what a whistleblower is. I explained to you that it starts out as a really good concept. We want to encourage people to come forward if they see a crime being committed without fear within the company, the organization, the government of being retaliated against. It is a good concept. But in the process, we cannot suspend our disbelief at the idea that people might be motivated out of bias or desire for personal gain, protection of their job. You got somebody at a company who's a total nincompoop and they're not doing a good job. They think they're going to be fired, and they come out with a complaint or an allegation that may be totally fabricated in order to gain protected status and to gain leverage over their employer to prevent their termination. Things like that do happen. I'm a lawyer. I've seen it. But the concept that this whistleblower, as the sacred cow of the left, is untouchable, unassailable, we cannot criticize him. He, of course, or she, has the purest of motives, is very similar to, well, what's some other good examples? Oh, Greta Thunberg, right? She's the kid who's got autism, clearly a little bit off. She's fixated on what? On global warming, climate change, and the whole nine yards. We can't criticize her, right? Because she is a child. You heard the brouhaha a few days ago about Donald Trump Jr. on the View. We've got some fun clips of that coming up later in the program. But he got attacked by Meghan McCain, who is looking like she ate Katie Porter. But anyway, Meghan McCain is there, and she's oh Sam, I know they're all shaking their heads in there. All right. No, she's not looking well. She's not looking well. And what does she do? The first thing she comes at Donald Trump with, Jr., right? Comes at him with I can't believe your family attacks Gold Star families. And it's the same thing. I'm listening to this and I hear in it the same type of logic that I'm hearing all over the news about the whistleblower. You can't attack the whistleblower. His motives are pure. Whistleblowers are beautiful. A whistleblower is a beautiful thing. A Gold Star family, a veteran, a child, a person of color. The left puts certain identities on people and makes them unassailable. So then uses, this is the critical thing, folks. They use these untouchable sacred cows as a medium for their message. And then when people like me with big mouths say, whoa, it's absurd. And Donald Trump dares in the 2016 election to get up and criticize the cons, who are being incidentally used as shills for Hillary Clinton, then everybody goes crazy in the Democrats. How dare Sam attack a veteran? How dare Donald Trump attack a Gold Star family? And you have someone like Meghan McCain who's bought it. She's supposedly a Republican. She's supposedly a conservative. And she's bought into it hook, line, and sinker. It is no wonder that we as conservatives have had up to here with the McCains of the world, up to here with the Romneys. Because these fake-o Republicans, these lame conservatives, have bought into the same paradigm that the left is. Now, the left hasn't bought into it. The left is selling it. But many, many Republicans have bought into it. And it's because, folks, and this is, if there's one takeaway here, if there's one takeaway from all of this whistleblower nonsense, I'll tell you, it's the left cannot win the argument on the merits. They never can. They've never been good at it, because when tested by logic, everything falls apart. Show me a socialist country that succeeded. So they don't talk about that. Instead, every article Trump is attacking the whistleblower. Where is it? In my stack here, I have it. Vanity Fair. When was this? Yesterday. Title of the piece. Of course, Donald Trump Jr. outed the alleged whistleblower. The whole piece is a whiny bitch fest. Pardon my language. All about how Donald Trump Jr., with of course tacit approval and support of his father, the president, have put the whistleblower in harm's way and are just attacking the whistleblower. Let me give you an example of this. Midway through the first paragraph, Trump, in addition to suggesting the government execute the whistleblower, sources like in the old days, he's repeatedly insisted the whistleblower must come forward, admitted he's trying to unmask the whistleblower, and creepily tweeted, quote, where's the whistleblower? I don't even get it. But nowhere is in this article any kind of substantive evaluation of whether or not this whistleblower complaint that came out that has launched an impeachment investigation of a sitting president might just be partisan hackery. Nowhere. Because they can't win that argument. And so instead, everything that you have heard and everything that you will hear in the weeks and months ahead will be all about how dare we attack a whistleblower. Because we don't want to use the name. We want Gold Star families, veterans, whistleblowers, transsexuals. I don't know. God only knows. Sam Rojofsky, more on this when we come back. Actual examples of this. Oh boy, I'm just getting warmed up. Back after this. Hi, it's Sam.
Hey, it's Ash, and we're Sam and Ash, your personal injury attorneys.
If you've been injured in an accident, don't talk to an insurance agent or claims adjuster. Talk to us.
Look, the insurance company's job is to deny your injuries, and that's because paying you what's fair costs them money.
We will get you the compensation you deserve. It's what's right.
So visit us at samandash.com.
Samandash.com. Sam and Ash.
Because you deserve what's right.
Whistleblowers' attorneys, Andrew Bakai and Mark Zaid, said yesterday, identifying any name whatsoever for the whistleblower will simply place that individual and their family at risk of serious harm. I call BS on this, of course, because for one, if they used producer Robbie's name instead of his real name, I don't think that anybody would have found the whistleblower. But what if they, the whistleblower is, and insert a name of someone completely not related to it. This just logically makes no sense, but I call BS on this because it is not about harm to the whistleblower. It is about harm to the narrative. And incidentally, speaking of that narrative, you remember when we first began looking at this whistleblower complaint and we read parts of that complaint and recognized that it was written very much in legalese. And it seemed very much as though an attorney had written the complaint. Now, a lot of hay has been made by a number of conservative media types about this. I'll tell you, honestly, it is not unusual if somebody has a serious enough issue and wants to become a whistleblower to consult with a lawyer. In fact, I would recommend to any of you that may be in a similar position to first talk to a lawyer before you do anything because you want to make sure you're protected. So I don't take that part of it necessarily as being a big problem. But what if I told you that the attorney that likely wrote out that complaint and has been advising said whistleblower from the very start, Mark Zaid, was really himself a giant leftist stooge? Let me tell you what I mean. There are a number of tweets that have surfaced now from Mr. Zaid that are a little worrisome, and I actually not just worrisome. They lay out the plan. They lay out the plan. This is the conspiracy to remove Donald Trump is actually not as obscure as some would have you believe. This in a report from Fox News one day ago. The whistleblower attorney had called for a coup, quote unquote, and a rebellion, quote unquote, against Trump in 2017. And going through his tweets back in 2017, Mark Zaid had said that a coup has started and that impeachment will follow ultimately. Now, what happened in January 2017, just for a little bit of focus here. I don't know, depending on the exact timing of that tweet, if Trump had even been inaugurated yet. But what Mark Zaid knew is he knew that there at the time is he knew then and there that all these pictures, all these sad, droopy faces that stood on the White House lawn listening to President Obama sing his swan song and announce the election of Donald J. Trump as president of the United States, that all these staffers and people in these background positions would remain in the building. They would remain credentialed employees, participants, and moles for the opposition. He knew this. And one of the things that is beginning to be obvious is that this Mark Zaid guy has been, and he's been openly soliciting plaintiffs and other complainants to come forward to give information and to serve as vessels for him to attack the president. So really what we have is the whistleblower. That's one word for him. The other one is, of course, stooge, because this guy is being used by the Democratic Party to overturn the effect of the election in 2016. Another July 2017 tweet by this attorney, quote, I predict, this is great, I predict CNN will play a key role in Donald Trump not finishing out his full term as president, close quote. Later that month, Zaid tweeted, quote, we will get rid of him, meaning Trump. And this country is strong enough to survive even him and his supporters. He is talking about you. How does that feel? Well, I don't know, friends, if we're strong enough to support this kind of subversion, but I certainly hope we are. All right, Sam Rogowski, Sam Nation, we got to take a quick break. After which we do have attorney Ashley Watkins in the studio, my fantastic law partner, who is ready to discuss some things. Got some questions for her. Don't go anywhere. Sam Rogowski, Sam Nation, here on the Sam Nation Radio Network.
We shall fight on the airwaves. We shall fight on Twitter and Facebook. We shall broadcast our program, whatever the cost may be. And if Sam Nation lasts for 1,000 years, men will say this was their finest hour.
Breaking rocks in a hot sun. I'm on the law in a low one.
I love it. I love it. Sam Rogowski, Sam Nation on the Sam Nation radio program. In studio, we have Ashley Watkins. Now, Ashley, welcome to the program.
Hey, it's great to be here.
And Ashley, if you don't remember this from a couple weeks ago, Ashley is my fantastic law partner here at Sam & Ash in Las Vegas, Nevada. And Sam & Ash is a new sponsor here on the program. We're very happy to have you here, Ashley. I really want to get the scoop, the update from you on what's been happening here with the NCAA and the name, image, and likeness compensation controversy that's been brewing. Because something big has happened since you were last here.
Yeah, since I was last here, the NCAA has responded and reacted to the Gavin Newsom, LeBron James signing of the bill on LeBron's show. And so the NCAA came out and they passed their own unanimous provision saying that they will work, each division will work together and they'll find their own guidelines to allow such type of payment.
So this story fascinates me because it hits some of my buttons, okay? One of them is the minute Gavin Newsom is for something, together with LeBron James, I mean, my antenna go up and I want nothing to do with that. So there's that. I also, the NCAA, I'm in a conflict because on one hand, the NCAA is a private organization or an association. They set rules. The schools can participate and play by the rules that are set by the NCAA. And I kind of don't like the idea of government coming in and telling the NCAA what to do or any private organization what to do. But then I also am a capitalist, right? And I like the idea of being able to make money and being able to make money, however unfair it may be to the others. If you're an exceptional athlete and you're working hard and have talent, perhaps you should make you should be able to benefit from that. So help me navigate this. Help explain this to me.
Yeah, and I absolutely agree. If you're an exceptional athlete, you should be able to make money. But from day one, the distinction's always been amateur versus professional. If you're in the collegiate level and you're playing as a college student athlete, you are first a student and then an athlete, and you're an amateur. And the NCAA is set out to make sure that all of its student athletes are amateurs, meaning they're not getting paid. They don't have endorsement deals.
And what's the benefit to that? Like, why is that important?
Well, it's important because the NCAA wants to prioritize education. That is the commodity that the NCAA has that the NFL doesn't, that the NHL, NBA, they can't provide.
Right. They want these college athletes to graduate.
Correct.
Yeah.
Correct. That's what they stand by. So going off what you said, the real issue, and I think I touched on this the last time I was here, the real issue goes, I look to the NBA, the NFL, and all of these professional entities that have actually forced these great athletes into the NCAA system. And the reason they do that is because these professional affiliations and associations have created eligibility requirements. Specifically, the NFL will not let you be eligible for its draft unless you are 3 years removed from high school. So it forces all of these great high school athletes into this NCAA system.
So if you're a football player, you have to, and you're fantastic, you have to play college ball for 3 years.
You have to do something after high school for 3 years. And the natural thing is to go to the NCAA. And the reason is because it's the best and most put together system there is.
So I would argue that you're being forced into an unpaid internship.
Yeah. I mean, you could go to the Canadian Football League, but it's not as great of a feeder to the NFL as the NCAA.
At the rest of your career. Okay.
Yeah.
So these athletes are out there busting their hump. The schools are making billions of dollars off of them collectively,
yeah.
Right? Media rights, because there's big money in sports. Athletic directors commonly, but if you don't know this, by the way, this is crazy. Athletic directors and football coaches, college football coaches and college athletic directors are typically the highest paid employees at these big universities.
Yeah. If you look at the maps, like they'll do a national map occasionally to figure out who the highest paid person is in a state. And it's 9 times out of 10, it's a college sports coach or athletic director.
But it's not the chancellor. It's not the Nobel, you know, prize winning economist.
But they'll still get in trouble when the sports teams do.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. So, all right. So what do you think? I'll do this. We'll take a quick break. When we come back, I want you to explain to me why the NCAA went from a hard no to like, yeah, let's check this out, because
let's talk about it.
All right, back right after this. Sam Rogowski, Sam Nation with Ashley Watkins from Sam and Ash. Hi, it's Sam.
Hey, it's Ash, and we're Sam and Ash, your personal injury attorneys.
An accident is incredibly stressful. Handling an insurance claim, totally overwhelming.
Also, insurance companies have zero interest in giving their money to you, because that just cuts into their profits.
Our team is in your corner because you deserve what's right, and that's full compensation for your injuries.
So visit us 24/7 at samandash.com.
Sam and Ash.
Because you deserve what's right.
Sam Rogowski, Sam Nation, we have Ashley Watkins here, my law partner here in Las Vegas, and we are talking about the NCAA, and Ashley, thanks again for being here. So they went from the NCAA, the National Collegiate Athletic Association, they have a hard prohibition against student athletes in college when they're members playing for member schools of making any money basically off of their name, image, likeness, or getting paid for their whatever, for participating on the teams. And the state of California comes in and says, you can't do that. You have to be able to allow athletes to get compensated. The NCAA then responds with hellfire and brimstone. We're going to sue. This is unconstitutional. Blah, blah, blah. And then 2 weeks later, what happens?
Yeah, they met. The NCAA met and they passed a provision saying they will, each division will come up with its own guidelines to allow its student athletes to be compensated for its name, image, and likeness.
What's your read on that? Why?
Why did they do that? It's simple. Save legal fees. I mean, they've got the crazy Californians that are the first one to pass it. They've heard all these other states are talking about doing similar bills. If all of them, if the NCAA sits back and doesn't react and just says it's unconstitutional, all these other states are going to start passing their own bills. And then now what? The NCAA went from one legal fight to potentially 40, 50, however many actually fall in line and agree with this. Expensive. Very expensive.
So that's my read of it, too. I see it as a brilliant tactical maneuver. Because what they've essentially done is they've taken all the wind out of the sails from all these other states that may have joined with what California was doing. And I'm a cynic. I see California as the government certainly is not. Oh, they don't really care about these athletes. What they care about is the tax revenue. For it would be a huge windfall for California because now you have a bunch of people who are not making any money. Who would be, and all that is very taxable. And, you know, we know California very well, and that's what they like to do. They'll tax anything that moves, especially if it moves up and down a basketball court.
Yeah,
so,
I mean, they've already talked about if these students elect to be paid under these provisions, they will now also try and tax their tuition.
Well, that's a great point. So they're not only, let's say they get I don't know what it would be, $100,000 a year for some endorsement deal or whatever. Now their tuition that has a face value of $40,000 a year, whatever it is, could be considered part of that compensation package. It's not just free education that's exempt in the IRS code, and they could either the state tax authority and potentially even the IRS could come grab it.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, these students, California athletes don't just play sports in California. They travel to all the other states around. And so California is going to create a tax nightmare for these young adults.
Well, I would also argue that the athletes from here in Nevada and athletes from other states play in California. So California sees an opportunity to tax players from out of state.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
It's very sticky, the sticky hands of the tax man.
Yeah, and I mean, it's just going to be an absolute nightmare for everyone.
Okay, so this is strategy. They're going to drag this on, and you think ultimately inside the organization, they do not want this.
Absolutely not. They don't want student athletes being paid, but the NCAA has been historically pretty good at seeing problems and finding a solution. They have in the past provided per diem allowances to athletes to help pay for food while they're on campus. So I think the NCAA might try and strike a middle ground. But right now, it's a stall tactic. Grab the story and go from there.
I remember a friend of mine, Petros Papadakis. He's a talk show host in L.A., a sports talk show host. And he played football for SC. And an anecdote from when he was on the team, he ordered some pizza. And the pizza delivery guy comes with a pizza box, and Petros doesn't have enough money to pay for the pizza. They're going through couch cushions, him and his roommates, to pull together coins. And on the pizza box is his picture along with a few other guys from the football team. He's on the box, and he can't afford to buy the pizza. And I'm looking at that as a capitalist and as an American. I think, you know, I don't like that either. So what do you say to people that will give you the economic argument that say this is a country where you should be free to profit off your success?
I say, yeah. And so go fight the fight with the NBA and NFL that are refusing to let these student athletes go get paid. I mean, you're forcing a payment structure into an education system at the end of the day.
I got it. So basically the NFL that refuses entry of players, what, for 3 years, 4 years,
yeah,
post high school?
Three.
3. Just make it so that 18-year-olds can go from high school straight into the NFL, and then they have a choice. They can play uncompensated in college, or they can go, what, straight to the NFL, straight to the NBA, that type of thing?
Yeah. I mean, in the story of Petros, I think that's outdated. The NCAA will give you a per diem stipend. When I was in Division III college, not with my face all over college basketball, and my face wasn't plastered on pizza boxes, I was getting an allowance to help pay for my food and meals while I was in school.
Did that allowance, were you faring better than if you were, let's say, like me, working at the bookstore? I worked at the library. Were you getting a little more money than the average student worker?
Any student that was just there on an educational scholarship was not getting a per diem meal allowance.
Mm. Must be nice.
It was.
Okay, well, it's an interesting story to me, and I think it's relevant even if you're not that into sports, because you're hearing a lot about it, and there's this economic and political element to it.
Well, yeah, and you mentioned that this is only a win for agents and lawyers, because, you know, all these kids, you put your face on a pizza box and then you're like, who? I'm not getting paid for that. Now I need a lawyer to go tell Papa John's to pay me for my face.
No matter what happens, the lawyers always get theirs. All right. Well, Ashley, really good to have you here. Thank you for being with me. I'm glad that you didn't spill your coffee today.
I know, me too.
That was an event this week. All right. Well, we'll fill you in on that another time. All righty. Anyway, thank you for being here, and thank you for your support, and we'll have you again soon.
Well, thanks for having me. It's been fun.
All right. Take care. Ashley Watkins from Sam & Ash. Sam Rzhovsky, back right after this.
And now, ladies and gentlemen, here's Johnny.
Now, ladies and gentlemen, on the show tonight is Sam Rzhovsky. Now, what Sam is the leading word in correct thinking, as opposed to Ed, which is drunk thinking. And that's usually where the left ends up, on the wrong side of right.
Hi, Sam Rzhovsky, Sam Nation, loud and clear here in the Desert Fortress, the Sam Nation Studios in Las Vegas, Nevada. This story here, got to give a little bit of context to the whistleblower. We know now that we know his name. We know that he's a dye-in-the-wool Democrat, registered party member, worked with John Brennan in the Obama administration, traveled with Joe Biden. Biden's the one who's neck deep. Bill Clinton was knee deep. But yeah, Biden's neck deep in this disaster. Rewinding this a bit and unpackaging this, do you know why Biden's a central figure to all of this? Well, Biden back in January of 2018, not a long time ago, right? Just under 2 years ago, when Trump was already president, was speaking at a conference and bragging about the role that he played vis-a-vis the Ukraine when he was vice president in Obama's second term. Have a listen to how Biden is describing his interactions with the Ukrainian president, and Biden's refusal or threatened refusal to give aid unless the Ukrainian president was to fire a prosecutor named Viktor Shokin. Listen to this.
And I was supposed to announce that there was another $1 billion loan guarantee. And I had gotten a commitment from Poroshenko and from Yatsenyuk that they would take action against the state prosecutor, and they didn't. So they said they were walking out to press conference. We're not going to give you the $1 billion. They said, you have no authority. You're not the president. The president said. I said, call him. I said, I'm telling you, you're not getting $1 billion. I said, you're not getting $1 billion. I'm going to be leaving here. And I think it was, 6 hours? I said, I'm leaving in 6 hours. If the prosecutor's not fired, you're not getting the money. Well, son of a bitch. got fired. And they put in place someone who was solid.
They put in someone who was solid. Huh, who could that be? Well, whoever it wasn't Viktor Shokin, who was at this time investigating the energy company that was paying $50,000 a month to Hunter Biden, son of the vice president, for a no-show job. So Biden, as vice president, withheld $1 billion of U.S. aid explicitly by his own freaking admission from the Ukraine, unless they fired a prosecutor who was actively investigating a company that was paying Biden's son a ton of money. What was Biden's son doing with the money? He was buying Coke, because we know that he was kicked out of the military for a bad Coke habit. This guy, he doesn't speak Russian, doesn't speak Ukrainian, he has no knowledge whatsoever in the industry of natural gas industry. He's just a lawyer. And the only reason he had the job, guys, is because his dad was vice president. And it was a means of this, of a politically connected major utility, this gas company, a state-run gas company, essentially, of pumping money through the back door to the U.S. vice president, who earlier in this clip that we didn't play for you is talking extensively about how he was Obama's point man. We've heard of him as the wingman, but he was also Obama's point man on the Ukraine. The whole thing, the pay-to-play scandal here that goes to the heart of the Obama administration, it is sick. And the media doesn't want to talk about it. Instead, they want to talk about Trump's supposed quid pro quo, which is, now back to it, the heart of the scandal. And this matters, guys, because this is exactly why the whistleblower controversy is a fabrication. If you are the sitting president of the United States and a major foreign power has a line in, a financial line in to a former vice president who is now running for president of the country. I got it. The fact that everybody's talking about Biden being Trump's opponent. But let me recast this and explain to you that he is running for president in a time when we have over and over again decried foreign interference in our election. So we have, by the vice president's own admission, a connection between his office and the official actions of the United States to harbor a potentially, we'll call it, pay-to-play scheme here involving his son. Which is, I think there's nothing more corrupting than something like that. And it's the duty of the executive branch to investigate this. And of course, they don't want to investigate it. And the guy, the whistleblower himself, was working for Biden when all of this was going on. So even if he's not a political hack, he still is very much keen to cover his own tracks. So this is epic. Do you remember Chuck Schumer's famous words? And this might have been right around the time that Trump had just been sworn in as president, right before. Okay, these was a couple weeks beforehand, when Chuck Schumer said this about Trump's comments regarding the intelligence community. Listen to this.
Let me ask you, I don't know if you have seen this. I don't want to blindside you with this. This is the latest statement, latest tweet, as you were just saying, President-elect's latest yeah. unsolicited pronouncement on the intelligence community. This was his tweet just a little while ago tonight. You see the scare quotes there. The yeah. intelligence briefing yeah. on so-called Russian hacking was delayed until Friday. Perhaps more time needed to build a case. Very strange.
Look.
But he's taking these shots, this antagonism, yep. this taunting to the intelligence community.
You take on the intelligence community, they have six ways from Sunday at getting back at you. So even for a practical, supposedly hard-nosed businessman, he's being really dumb to do this.
What do you think the intelligence community would do if they were motivated?
I don't know, but from what I am told, they are very upset with how he has treated them and talked about them.
They most certainly are. So the whistleblower, Eric C., worked for the National Security Council in 2017, worked at the CIA, worked under James Clapper, worked under John Brennan, is a registered Democrat, hired by the Obama administration, specifically in the office of the vice president with Joseph Biden, who himself is completely complicit in quid pro quo deals with Ukraine to protect his graft-ridden son. I don't think Trump is perfect. I have my issues with him. But this isn't even about Trump anymore. This offends me as an American. This offends me as a rule follower. This offends me on a very basic level of decency and what's right. I have no words. So you have to understand, friends, that this is what is going on behind the scenes. This is what it's all about, and that this is why they are fighting so hard. They are fighting so hard. And if you think that journalism is real, this all goes, by the way, hand in hand with another big news story this week, which is the story about ABC killing the Epstein story. You know that James O'Keefe, Project Veritas, was able to obtain a clip of Amy Robach talking about how ABC, her then employer, had killed a story on Epstein. Listen to her. She's on a hot mic. This never went on air. This was in an archive, and somebody in there turned this over to Project Veritas. Listen to this.
I've had the story for 3 years. I've had this interview with Virginia Roberts. We would not put it on the air. First of all, I was told, who's Jeffrey Epstein? No one knows who that is. This is a stupid story. Then the palace found out that we had her whole allegations about Prince Andrew and threatened us a million different ways. She told me everything. She had pictures. She had everything. She was in hiding for 12 years. We convinced her to come out. We convinced her to talk to us. It was unbelievable what we had. Clinton. We had everything.
Clinton. They had Clinton. Now, it goes. She keeps on this, right? She keeps explaining, and you can tell how disturbed Robach is about the fact that ABC wouldn't let her go with this.
I tried for 3 years to get it on to no avail, and now it's all coming out, and it's like these new revelations, and I freaking had all of it. I'm so pissed right now. Like, every day I get more and more pissed because I'm just like, oh my God, what we had was unreal. Other women backing it up. Brad Edwards, the attorney, 3 years ago saying, there will come a day when we will realize Jeffrey Epstein was the most prolific pedophile this country has ever known. I had it all 3 years ago.
And ABC killed the story because Clinton was attached to Epstein. And when Robach is talking about this 3 years ago, even she furious about the fact that she couldn't. She had a scoop and is not going to get credit for it. She's furious about it. But even she can't see the forest for the trees. There's a big lib, no doubt. And that's because her story was getting killed because Clinton was attached to it. And the media from the Prince of Darkness himself on down were protecting Hillary Clinton and were all in for Hillary winning and beating Donald Trump. And ostensibly, as you look through this ABC story, the ABC said, well, we didn't have corroboration and we didn't, you know, blah, 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 blah. But they ran things. Look at, and again, let's talk about Kavanaugh. They didn't have corroboration. In fact, they had exculpatory evidence. People who said, no, that did not happen. No, she is a nut job. No, no, no. Totally out of character. Then you've got the Covington kids. They ran at the smear campaign there. It's just, uh, it's the media is so all in anti-Trump that I can't believe I'm saying this. But if the conventional wisdom out there is that Trump is a bully, I'm just going to say it's the other way around. I think Trump is the kid that's getting picked on. Can you imagine where Trump's poll numbers would be if he got half as good and positive of coverage, even when he's screwing up, as Obama did when he was screwing up? So when we talk about fairness and we talk about, this to me is exactly why Trump will win again, because if the media were fair, then their criticisms of Trump would land. They would land because people would take them at their word. But we are not listening to anything that the media has to say. This is the mainstream media that buried a story about a pedophile to protect Hillary Clinton and to get back at Donald Trump. These people are despicable. And it is these same despicable people that Donald J. Trump Jr. went on The View with. And when I, friends, told you about these sacred cows, it's Meghan McCain that's the biggest disappointment. This is on Thursday. Donald Trump Jr. getting attacked by Meghan McCain. You'll hear that and then listen to his reply.
When you're talking about attacking Gold Star families who have given the ultimate sacrifice more than any of in this room have given, and you put them through pain, does it make you feel like this was worth it?
And I know he does a lot with Gold Star families, and he calls a lot of those Gold Star families, and he has a lot of care for those people.
With angel moms.
When he's under constant attack by the same people, when he's under attack by the establishment, when he's under attack by this, the reality is he's a counterpuncher. And as a conservative, I would hope that you would appreciate that conservatives haven't been known for fighting back for a very long time. They've ceded ground to the liberals and the liberal elite for decades by not actually fighting back.
Yes, because Republicans for years have been the left's emotional support animals. Their role is to just lay there, look up, stick their tongues out, and not do anything. And along comes Donald Trump, and he fights back, and the entire world is turning on him. So my take on all of this is that this to me shows that there's a great likelihood that the election goes Trump's way, more so now than ever before, because the rising shrillness of the hysteria, coupled with a refusal to discuss the accusations on their merits, weighing things that are very important, like bias, and wanting to make a sacred cow out of the whistleblower, the same way that Meghan McCain talks about these Gold Star families, this Americans see through it, because we are a no BS people. And that is just one of the things that makes this country great. Wonderful to be with you here today. We will, we're going to see you next week. I believe on Saturday is when we'll do the show. And yes, prepare for the holidays. I cannot believe, is it Thanksgiving? It's around the corner. Eek! Sam Rogowski, Sam Nation on the Sam Nation Radio Network.